2017. Three men joined together in a pact to see what they could collectively do to advance civilization, further the cause of world peace, and elevate mankind. These three men were internationally renowned musician and Linkin Park multi-instrumentalist Dave Phoenix Ferrell, multiple PGA Tour champion and world-class golfer Brendan Steele, and Mark. They named themselves the Members. Those who they chose to sit with and ponder the mysteries of the universe, they named the Guests. What you're about to listen to is one of those historic conversations. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Welcome to Member Guest.
Okay, and we're here. It's a big day for us here at Member Guest. We are on location. We have traveled a bit. Truth be told, this is our second location of the day. First one didn't work out. We'll get more into that in a minute. Welcome. As the man said in the intro, welcome to Member Guest. Thank you for listening. With me, as always, is Brendan. Brendan, how are you?
Doing fantastic. Caffeinated. Hydrated. I'm ready to go. Mark's been stressed.
Although the stress level's been pretty good today. I thought it would be worse.
To set the scene a little bit, we're in San Diego. We're down at Torrey Pines. There's a golf tournament going on here this week. The original plan for today was to record in the media center. We went over there, took the little VIP car ride over. They had set aside a little cubicle of sorts for us. And long story short, it did not work. The media center was a clever combination of the doctor's office meets the DMV. And
you're in kind of a fishbowl.
Yeah.
It was a radio booth, which sounded good. I think in theory it was good, but there were a lot of people trying to work in there, and so energy would have been way down.
Way down. So we've moved. We're now in the presidential suite.
Of course.
Brendan's room.
It's the only way I roll.
That's how he does it. And we have a wonderful guest with us here today. He has been on the podcast before, so it's his second visit.
So he's already a member.
Already a member. So I guess not even a guest. We have an additional member with us today.
He's a guest member? We're not sure how this works exactly, but you're a member, one way or the other. We have Keegan Bradley, major champion, Ryder Cupper, returning member of the podcast, one of my closest friends, biggest head of anyone I know.
Yeah. I went back and listened to the first podcast we did with you, Keegan. First off, it was 2 years ago, which is crazy. Nuts.
Riviera 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was going into it kind of thinking like, almost a little bit nervous. You know, that was a long time ago for us. It was early on. I was kind of, you know, when you go back to something, at least especially with music, when I do this, when I go back to something, I'm kind of like, I hope I still like mm-hmm. what it sounds like. I hope it wasn't, I felt like it was cool. And then you come back to it and it's almost like embarrassing.
Yeah.
I went back to it and I liked it. I liked our first podcast a lot. I thought you carried the load very, very well and did an awesome job. What did you think about that first experience?
Well, I was pumped because obviously I'm a big Linkin Park fan. We had met but not really hung out that much. And I was excited. Steely was really excited about doing this. And you guys had already had some really good guests already. So I was kind of nervous to come on and do it. But it was great. I had a blast. I don't remember much of it, what we said. I can't believe that's 2 years ago. But glad to be back.
And how has your life changed since being on the Member Guest podcast?
Well, I have a...
It opened up a lot of doors for you.
It has. I have a two-year-old son.
I don't think we had any part of that.
No, you didn't.
Maybe.
So he was already had been born then, but it was like 2 months in. We were... Those first couple months are brutal. They're tough. So I was in the middle of it then, but now he's two, and it's been great.
Now, in the meantime, since then, you've wanted to do another podcast with us because you didn't think you put your best foot forward the first time.
I did. I felt like I wasn't my normal self, so I wanted to do another one today.
But that being said, I always get a lot of good pub about your podcast. Like,
really?
People seem to really have liked it. So,
oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. We were talking about this the other day. And I know you wanted to get into a little bit, but I wanted to open it up to everybody here. Best meltdown story on the golf course.
Let's see.
So we can start with one of your own.
Okay, because I have
some about me. I
asked permission to Steely last night. We went to dinner, and I was like, "Listen, I want to talk about what a wacko you are on the golf course. Is that okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem." I remember multiple meltdowns, but I remember the first time I got talked to by the tour for swearing, which I was playing Akron. I was, like, I think near the lead of the tournament. The 16th hole is like this long par 5. You know the hole. Down the hill.
The worst.
I smashed a drive, got it all the way down the hill. It went 430 yards. And I had like a 4-iron in. And I hit this great shot. It one hopped over the green, went in the back rough, and you're dead. And I end up making 6. And as I'm walking off the green, I kind of was yelling the F word. And
kinda.
It was kind of a yell. It was really bad. Like, it was bad. And it got on TV, and it got on, like, and then I went onto my Twitter, and it was like all these parents saying, my son was watching and he heard you, and like just down the list it went. And I went into like this depression. I felt so bad. Next thing you know, I get a letter from the tour, like, "Hey, we caught you swearing." And when you get I hope I don't get another letter for this, but when you get a letter from the tour for getting fined, you've probably never had this, but they write in quotations what you said. It was bad. I felt so bad. But I got this letter from the tour, and it said, "On the 16th hole at Akron, you said blank, 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 F blank," like really bad. And so I opened it up with all my buddies that you know, and we framed it and put it in my bar at my house. It was funny. That's the most memorable one where I felt like awful about it. So for me, that's the one I think back on and wish I had that one back.
Obviously, we've all been there. Whenever you play golf, it's a range of emotions. But that is always the worst when there's consequences like beyond just like yourself being mad. And if you're playing well, there's cameras around, there's microphones around, and you're more likely to get caught. Yeah. I mean, I think like Tiger's the most fined guy, you know, or that's what they always say. Like, Tiger's the most fined guy on the tour. It's like, well, every shot that he's ever hit has been on TV and on a microphone. So it only makes sense.
Yeah.
Also for him, it's whether he's winning or whether he's going to miss the cut by 6.
Doesn't matter.
Every shot he hits.
Every shot. Yeah. If he's playing bad, every shot's still out there. If I'm playing bad, nobody sees anything. I can be snapping clubs and swearing and doing whatever. Nobody cares.
Yeah. And that's definitely a thing. Like, there were a couple of years where I was in a featured group like every week, and it's exhausting. It's like, because you know you're hyper aware of, now with the cell phones too.
Yeah.
Like, even when I first came on tour, that wasn't a thing. Now you can get on your cell phone and people have it, and then it's on Twitter, and then it's on
Barstool.
Instagram, it's on Barstool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the world we live in now.
So I know Keegan wants to tell a story about me, or at least one, but give me a good Dave or Mark meltdown story.
Music story.
I wanted a good golf story.
Okay.
I wanted, like, at some point when you were like, your eyes were about to pop out of your head because you hate golf so much.
I was immediately thinking golf. Mark might be able to have a Dave meltdown story in music, but I can't think of any off the top of my head in music. I'm sure I've had meltdowns. That's probably like a life meltdown at that point.
Mm.
I mean, otherwise it's just kind of like my bass doesn't work.
Now I've been on a lot of road trips with you, like in the van where we're just like starving, hungry, and you lose it. You're hangry for sure.
I don't, fun fact about me, I don't ever feel hungry. I just don't. Like, I cannot eat all day.
That's one of the wildest statements I've ever heard. I'm the opposite. I'm always hungry. Like, I could eat a full meal at any moment of the day. You're the same way, Steve.
I can eat. Like, I can always eat, but I don't feel almost like hunger. I just get to where I start feeling like shittier and shittier and like angry and just irritated.
That's
and
called you don't know being why. Hungry.
Is that what that is?
That's what that is.
Mentally, he's decided there's no hunger. Yeah.
I also don't ever feel...
A sandwich real bad.
I don't ever feel anger. I just want to like smash something.
I just want to punch somebody in the face.
I had a... one meltdown, which was more like me messing around, but it was half, I was half angry, was just a bad round on the golf course. I ended up taking off both my shoes and throwing them like off the off the tee, like kind of
down the
fairway.
Dave's meltdowns are always funny. Like they're never really serious.
But I had one that was, it was, it's a perfect example because it was a meltdown that just led to more anger and frustration and even maybe like a little bit of embarrassment. To your point, like I didn't get a letter about it, but I was playing in this tournament at our club. It's a modified Chapman, so it's a version of an alternate shot. And so the guy I'm playing with is a good player, and he's hitting good tee shots, and then I have to hit his ball, and I'm hitting tee shots that are like out of bounds and the shit, whatever. So I kept having these situations where he wouldn't even be getting to play a second shot, and I was playing his good drive and having all that pressure, having to hit it, and I got the shanks. So I just kept literally hitting the hosel. So it's the, for context, it's the part of the club where the club face connects to the shaft, and when you hit it on that part, it goes like a 45 degree angle right of your target, and it feels awful in your hands, and it's embarrassing, and everybody laughs, and or if you're in a tournament, everybody just kind of like
gets quiet,
looks the other way yeah, and gets quiet,
really quiet.
So we finally get to probably 12. Eric gets a great drive to the point of where on this par five, if I was feeling good, we'd have a chance to go for it in two, and I'm like, I'm just gonna hit a 9-iron and like lay it up, shank that, goes into the water like this lake that isn't even, shouldn't even be in play at a 45 degree angle to the right of me, and I'm so pissed at this point. I'm so frustrated, and I've been holding it in, you know, at this point for 3 hours plus, and I'm like, fuck. I take it, I go to throw my club kind of like at, like just sidearm it like towards where our cart is with the intention of hitting, you know, having
go
it hit
way
my
to
bag.
The left, the club.
I release it early on the same kind of 45 degree angle off of where I'm trying to throw it.
Hosel throw.
You shanked that.
I shank the throw, and my 9-iron goes into the lake. Oh. But it's not far enough in to where it's like, that's gone.
You had to go,
you can't
get it.
It's far enough in where now, and there's reeds and all the stuff, and we're playing the game of like, do I go get it? Like, it's I kind of think it's right there. You can't see it. I never got it back, but then I had to explain to everybody that we're playing with, because they're just like, usually Dave's got a pretty cool head. I've never seen you lose it like that. When I had calmed down a little bit, you know, 10 minutes later, I had to say, the funny thing about that, guys, is that I didn't actually even try to throw the club into the lake. That was also an accident. I was trying to just flip it back at the cart.
That's good.
Has a way of making you feel stupid, right?
Like, that's the worst part about getting pissed on the course, is like you immediately after, I feel so embarrassed.
Well, but and when you're watching somebody else do it, you're always like, oh.
There's sometimes then, it helps though.
Yeah, it does.
Like, it's sometimes I'll get like really pissed, and then I'll feel like way better.
Yeah,
and I'll be like, wow, that I needed that.
Whenever I get bummed instead of pissed,
oh,
I play
it's over.
Way worse.
Yeah.
You got no chance.
The end of that story with the fine is, I approached, I don't want to say his name, but he's a Hall of Famer on the tour. And I said, I was a second year player. I might have been even a rookie. And I said, I'm freaking out about this. I'd never gotten a letter. And he said to me, Keegan, you're not a part of the PGA Tour until you get fined by them. And it made me feel so much better, because I thought that was like such a good thing to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, have you been fine? He's like, yeah, like 10s to 20 of times. It made me feel better.
Mark, any stories from you?
You know, the only one I can think of is, it was years ago, but most of my meltdowns happen on the putting green because I'm a terrible putter. And I missed a putt, absolutely should have made. And I came back to my bag and took my putter and just whacked my bag on the back of the golf cart. Put my putter in. It was like three or four holes later, and I go to pull my driver out.
Broken.
And I pull my driver out, and the shaft's broken in half. And I was just like, what the? Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah.
Temper tantrum back there about four holes ago. So, yeah, that made me feel
pretty
stupid.
That's a pretty basic one. Yeah. That's kind of, everybody's kind of done that, that move.
I think I'm just a bit of a wimp when it comes to, I don't want to throw my clubs in the lake.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to be sans clubs.
I'm not a big, like, club thrower or breaker. Keegan, would you like?
Well, I have so many. Like, you guys know him as, like, this relaxed, like, easygoing. We all do. But he is a maniac on the golf course. Like, steal it. I think there's three types of people. There's a person that gets pissed on the course as a pro. There's people that get pissed visually, like they slam a club or they're yelling or they'll throw a club, whatever. The other kind of pro is they yell at their caddy in like a really mean way. It's not like joking around, like it's bad. That's their outlet. The third type of player, which Steely is, they talk and complain about the shot and go on and on. And that's Steely. So, and I love it. I like it. When he tells me these stories, I get such a kick out of him.
It's his favorite thing.
It's my favorite thing.
And he loves
thing.
It if he can look across the fairway and see that one's going
on. Whenever I look
too.
Across the fairway, I see Steely walk down the fairway. His arms are flailing. He's talking to Christian. I can just see that he's going crazy. I love it. It's my favorite thing.
You know that I caddied for Brendan.
In a tournament?
Yeah, yeah.
Which one?
I got to
Vegas last year.
Oh, was he going crazy or no?
We had some moments.
Yeah.
Did we? I don't even remember.
So he doesn't know. Like, sometimes you don't even know.
Yeah. Well, because you know what? He thinks we had moments, and I think that was probably like a super calm
day. That's how crazy it can get.
Yeah.
So after the Thursday round at Sony, where Steely played really well, we're having dinner. It honestly blew low 30s consistently all day, and I think it was gusting to 45.
So this
plus.
Is in Hawaii 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
At a tournament I never play, and Keegan's been telling me to play it for years.
I've been trying to get him to play for at least 2 years, maybe
I hadn't
more.
Played it since 2011.
Yeah. And we get done, we're having dinner, and his coach was caddying for him. Should I say his name?
Yeah,
or?
He's been on
okay.
the podcast.
Chris
too.
Mason.
One of the member guest members, Chris Mason, was caddying yeah. for me.
So Steely shot 68. Incredible score. He's in like fifth, probably fourth.
Yeah.
It was really
a good
like
score.
If you adjust the win, he shot in the low 60s, honestly.
Yeah.
And he's up at the cell bar, and I looked at Mace and I go, how was he out there today? And he goes, he puts his hands in his head and he goes, Keegan, it was so bad. And I like, what do you mean? I start laughing.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know how Christian does it. He's going on about these stories, and I'm going, no, that can't be true. Steely comes back, he sits down, he looks at me and goes, boy, was I a maniac out there today. And I'm like, oh, my God. Mace was just telling me this, all these stories. And then I said to Steely, he's telling me these stories the second hole of the day.
Second hole of the tournament.
Of the tournament. He's been playing for now for probably 17 minutes, 20 minutes. He's got a bogey putt. Or no, you hit it over the green and you're going crazy. And he said, Mace, I just want to go in. I want to go home. I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, that's my thing. Okay, that's it for me. I want to go home.
I want to go home now. But it's
but
not,
I wanted to
it's
go
not
home.
Joking. It's
no, it's
very
not
serious.
Joking. It's like that's all I... Because when things are going poorly, the only thing that'll make me happy is to go home and hang out with my family and
my
friends and like get away from golf. So I'm always just like, okay, that's it. Like I'm packing it in. I'm going
and
home.
And then you had a 12-footer for bogey that whacked the top of the hole and went in.
Yeah, it was going 8 feet by. It was looking like a triple.
So he makes bogey there. So you're one over through two or two over through
one
two?
One over through two.
Next hole he hits one, and in you sell better than I do. You had a tree in your way.
So I got a tree in my way, and there's like kind of like you could go low left, but there's a lake on the left, and then you could go like in between the trees, kind of like maybe hit some like leaves, but kind of get it through on the right, whatever. And I looked at Mason and I was like, you're going to just have to tell me what to do here because the only thing I can see is a double. And he's like, well, what about
this? He's telling me this story and I'm like, this can't have happened. He's on the third hole of the tournament of the year.
Of the year.
You haven't played
third hole of the season. I've been off for 6 weeks.
I mean, so he, long story short, did you make bogey there?
I made bogey there.
So he's two over through three, which is not great, but it's through three holes. And he shoots 68. And then you had another meltdown on 18.
Where 17
you,
and 18.
17 and 18, where you hit it left on 18. You said, Mason, if we can't find this ball, I'm going in.
So there's a ton of space left. Like, it's in play, but I figured, like, maybe we just won't find it. Now we only get 3 minutes to look for it. We used to get 5 minutes to look for it. So I'm like, if this ball's not there, like, my hotel room's right there. I'm not walking back.
Yeah.
I told Mason, I'm like, I'm done. I'm not walking back. We can't find that ball. I'm in fifth place in the tournament on the first day.
And so he's telling all these stories, like, I'm dying laughing. It's so funny. And I go, Steely, you know this story normally ends in, and then I shot 76,
yeah,
and then missed the cut.
That's why I'm in 130th.
Right. He shot 68. He's like, he was in fifth place, two shots back or something. And then we were talking, I work with a sports psychologist, and his thing he talks about is being good around the 15 seconds that you're around the ball. That's the only time you need to be good all day, really, in the game of golf. Like, you can, in what Steely does, and I told him this, he's really good at that. So he can be melting down about a shot down the fairway, and then what he was doing in that tournament was, around the ball, he was his best self, and he was able to compete. Some guys can't do that. And that's something that, that's what he does best. That's why I think emotional players like him, like myself, you need to be emotional. Whether it's really good or really bad, or you make a putt and you see guys fist pump, that's part of being an emotional player. That's part of what I feed off of, and what, like, I'm never going to be a Jason Duffner type that has no emotion, makes a putt, doesn't have a reaction. And I think emotional players have to use that to their strength. And that's, I think you do that, you did that great that week, obviously, because you almost won.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you think about it, and sometimes when I'm trying to be, like, I really go out and go, like, just don't be an asshole today. Like, be calm, like, be nice to yourself. Because my friends, like Dave and I talk about this all the time. He's like, could you just be nice to yourself this week? Is there any chance of that? And I'm like, nah, probably not. Because I don't ever blame Christian. I don't ever blame, and to my own fault, I blame myself for everything.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's always my fault. I don't do the, like, you should have done this, or I got screwed there, or whatever. It's always like, I'm an idiot, I suck. Yeah. Like, do that whole thing. But whenever I try to be super calm, I usually don't play well.
I think, I really think that's a thing in golf. You have to be yourself on the course. Like, you can't be another person.
Yep.
Like, I can't go out there and just walk down the fairway, not have any reaction to any shot, and just, like, go, oh, I shot 72 today, I don't care. Or I shot 68, I don't care. Or I shot 76, I don't care. That's not who I am. And when you try to be that other person, it doesn't work, I don't think. So, but back to the maniac side of Steely. It is, makes me laugh. I get such joy out of it. Like, I love it, especially when the end of the story is, you played well.
Yeah,
that makes the story...
It loses some of it if you're like, and I shot 78 and I'm super pissed.
Like, I wouldn't talk about it otherwise. But the best part of that is going 30 minutes of stories of how he's having a meltdown and shot 68. Any other person, that's 76, and they're like packing their bags and going to go straight from the course to the airport.
Yeah, the next day. They have no chance. Yeah. It's going to blow 30 the next day. Cut's going to be one over. Can't shoot 500.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
Totally.
Do you have any friends, or have you guys ever just walked off a round? Is there consequences for that? Or
yeah.
Don't most guys at that point just kind of injury withdrawal?
Yeah. They do.
WD.
I'd say it happens almost once a tournament.
I don't know if during the round guys do it that often, but guys withdraw from every event after the first round, for sure. And it's usually with a brain injury.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Totally. Psychological.
Psychological.
Yeah. Or psychic injury.
Psychic injury. Mm.
They know.
A psychic harmed them.
Or they know already what they're going to shoot tomorrow.
Yeah.
Didn't we have an idea once a long time ago that we were going to try to get you an emotional support dog for the tournament?
Did we have that idea? I like that idea.
And it was just going to be like, somehow it'd have to get cleared through the PGA, and then you'd have like a little dog.
The crazy part is, at this day and age, like, they'd probably have to let me have it.
Right? They would.
Like, if I had like a doctor's note or whatever saying you have to have this, the tour would be like, oh God.
You'd get a lot of TV coverage.
Yeah, you would.
That would be so awesome.
That would be great.
So funny.
I would love that.
Emotional support cat. On a leash.
Every week it's a different animal. It's like, one week it's an elephant. One week it's a snake. You're just like hanging.
We were out in Hawaii just like a half a week before you guys were out there, and flight out was super, super easy and whatever. Lindsay and I were sitting like kind of across an aisle from each other. Just like, I think we're both watching iPad, whatever, watching TV, and she gives me like, she turns really quickly and gives me this like weird look. I'm like, take my headphone off, and she's just looks at me and she's like, did you hear that? And I was like, I don't think so. Like, what? I'm watching a show. Like, what am I supposed to have just heard? Like, give me some kind of context. Then I hear like a little baby go, meow. I was like, oh, I'm like, is that like a baby? She's like, I don't know. That might be a cat. So now we're like playing the game of what's making this noise. And I hear it again, like really loud this time. And she does the same thing. She's like, shoots over and looks at me like, you heard that, right? Like, I'm not going crazy. I'm like, yeah, I totally heard that. This huge, like three rows ahead of us, there's now this humongous fur ball of a cat that is sitting on this dude's lap, and he's just like petting it. And yeah. It is freaked out, and it is now out of its little kennel carrier. And Lindsay's super allergic to cats.
Yeah, I am too.
So she's just like, oh no. And so at this point, the stewardess was right there too, taking a drink order or whatever. And Lindsay's like, do you have any Benadryl on the flight? Like, I'm just really allergic to cats, and I don't feel anything yet, but I can almost imagine that I'm feeling it already.
Yeah,
and
you can sense that it's coming.
And then the flight attendant is trying to get a little bit of a gauge of like, well, how serious is this? Like, are you going to die from this cat, or are you just going to be, you know, like, what are we talking about? What's the allergy here? And Lindsay will just straight up, like, her eyes will swell shut. Like, it can get bad. And the lady's like, all right, I'm going to go check. I'll come right back. She leaves. She comes back. She's like, none of us have any Benadryl, but there is a emergency medical kit in the plane. She's like, if you start feeling anything, let me know, because we'd rather be on it earlier as opposed to later. But to open the emergency medical kit, we need to have a doctor open it. So we're going to need to ask if there's a doctor on board. And then she's like, and if not, she's like, usually there will be, but if there's not, or there's not one who will open it to distribute to you the allergy medication, she's like, then I can just open it. Like, she's like, then I will have like some kind of,
She'll be sworn in by the pilot.
Yeah. We're going through this whole deal for this fluff ball of a cat. And then we start to talk about like Hawaii, and I don't think you can even bring like a pet to the island. They have all these rules and regulations about the animals. And I'm just like, well, what if it's like a service animal? Do you get to just bring it in, or does it have to go to quarantine? Sure enough, when we land, there's a separate like crew that's coming just to import the cat in Hawaii. You know, it's a service animal, and it's a emotional support cat, but they have this whole other process. And I overheard the guy talking about it and saying like, they're going to probably spend 2 hours processing the cat in Hawaii at this point.
But they're just going to let it through?
Apparently.
So it's a license to do whatever you want, basically.
You can. So I think you could, you know,
PGA
all that to
Tour
say,
emotional support elephant.
It brought up.
You can fix the footprints on the green.
Yeah.
How about that?
The paw prints. It brought up this other memory. We have a buddy, and this has not been confirmed completely, but there is rumor that his close friend, who was a flight attendant, had recently had a emotional support monkey, that the monkey had its own emotional support cat. And on the flight, the monkey would pet the cat.
Wow.
How about that? Now that is next level.
Flying is just the worst. There's nothing good about it. It's only getting worse too.
It's getting crazy. Yeah. Do you like flying? You don't like flying?
No, sure I hate flying. That'll be the one thing when hopefully I can retire. I'm just never gonna fly again. Like, only just if I have to fly, I'm gonna do it. But I don't like, that's the worst part about playing on the tour, is the travel.
Yeah,
I don't enjoy getting on planes, doing airports, all that junk. But it's getting worse for sure, I think. Like, when I go to airports, I see the wildest stuff. People seem to lose their common sense in airports and flying, don't they? Like, there should be a separate line for those type of... I haven't traveled in 3 months. Oops, I got to go to this line over here.
Yeah, like, I just don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You, sir, don't look like you know what you're doing. We have a special line for you.
It's way over there, and it's really long.
It's really long, and it's really difficult to get through. Does Seinfeld have a stand-up about this? He talks about the cart at the airport and like how it's beeping at you to get out of the way. And he goes like, "Who are these people that are on the cart? If you're too old, fat, or slow to get to your gate on time, maybe air travel isn't for you."
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Sure, that's probably not PC these days.
No. You're going to have to delete that out.
Yeah. Mark, work on that part. Make me sound good there.
No, you,
it's
you
a Seinfeld quote.
Yeah, you attributed it to
Nothing
Seinfeld.
Nothing to do with
so
me. I just
totally
find
fine.
It to be funny. Is that bad?
I might have to edit that part out.
So before the podcast started, Keegan was trying to blow one of my topics, but he has been to, we've decided, what, four concerts
Five.
Ever? Five concerts ever. One of them we talked about the first time, which was Summer Sanitarium.
Yeah. I saw Dave.
Saw Dave doing his thing.
That was the best one, right?
That was the best. Honestly, that was the wildest one. Like, that's...
All right,
I saw stuff.
I'll take it.
I saw stuff at that Summer Sanitarium that was
wild. You're talking
about
boobs?
Yes, and, like, it was wild.
Dave's boobs were out.
It was wild. Yeah.
I flashed you.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Yep. It's been known to happen.
And then...
I saw Jack Johnson in Central Park.
Okay.
And I've seen Mumford & Sons three times.
Yeah, so three times. So the most recent time... Mumford & Sons, we went in November. They happened to be playing. It's really hard to get Keegan out to anything during a tournament week. I'm a little more relaxed. Like, I'm ready to go. Like, if there's something fun happening, I want to be there. Keegan, he's hard to get out of his room, especially, like, right before the tournament starts. This happened to be a Tuesday night.
It did.
It was a Tuesday night, and we were staying 100 yards from Toyota Center in Houston, and Mumford was playing there. It's his favorite band.
Yeah, I love Mumford & Sons.
And like, so I tried to convince him and convince him and convince him, and he finally decided, I'll go. So we get there, and Ben had, our friend, had sorted out tickets for us. Didn't work out for us. We were a little too far away.
We were in a box.
We were in a box,
far,
but it was like, we weren't in the mix. But Keegan's not a big, like... being around people person either, so like the box is kind of a safe play.
I
go down to the box office and I'm like, all right, are there any tickets you guys have left? I'm like, yeah, we got, you know, four tickets and whatever. And I was like, okay. So I'm texting him and he's like, yeah, do it. So got us three on the floor. We go down to the floor and Keegan has the greatest time,
the best time.
He's dancing
and
if
anybody knows me, my wife tells a story she just told the other night. On our first date, I don't remember doing this, but I said, there's one thing I hate to do and I won't do, and it's dance. Like, I told her that on our first date.
Right up
like,
front.
It's really a serious thing. Like, my biggest fear is, like, being at a wedding and some, like, drunk person comes up and grabs me and is, like, pulling me on the dance floor. Like, there's nothing worse that could happen to me. So at the Mumford & Sons, I was jumping around.
He's jumping around. He's having a great time. He's singing. He's like, I'm so glad we did this. It's like one of those things.
It was one of those things where the next day, I think I like thanked you.
Yeah. It was kind of weird because we don't really have that kind of relationship.
Because like, Steely does this. My wife does this where they force me to do things that I would never do. And then after, I'm so thankful that I did it. Like, that was one of those moments.
I did think, like, one of the funny, like, classic parts, though, is, like, so we're on the floor, we're dancing, we're singing, we're having a great time, we've had a couple beers. And then at some point, these guys turn around and are looking at us. And we're like... kind of like...
Now I want to go home.
Yeah. This is where Keegan wants to go home. Yeah. The guys recognize us because they work for Putnam, right? They were two Putnam guys. And so they're like, they're wanting to get pictures with us now. And like the wives. So now we're like, oh no. Like, Keegan's been...
Back to the box.
He thought he was acting like an idiot in front of everybody and nobody like was paying attention.
Right.
So
something happens to me with Mumford & Sons. Like, I mean, you would know you because you're way into music and stuff, but like, I get like, I'm a different person when I'm here listening to their music. Like, I just love it. Like, every song, like, I can just put on Mumford & Sons on whatever thing and just go down, never skipping a song. And live, oh, they're just so good.
It's fun energy. It was good. It ended up being a really fun night, but it was, I mean, going to live shows, we've talked about this a ton, obviously, but it's one of my favorite things to do. It's probably maybe my number one thing to do, but I always want to take people that don't go or don't go a lot. I'm always trying to drag them because I know they're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, I want to take Johnny, another member.
To like Korn
John
or
Curran.
Tool
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to take him out to something that we both have in common that we really like, and he would just have a meltdown.
Yeah, he would love it.
Yeah. And then you're always like, he'll never go.
He'll never, but he won't.
We can get John. We'll get John in on something.
Yeah. John is a big Linkin Park fan.
Yeah.
Like he, when I was with him, like when we're just casually like playing golf, like he'll be listening to Linkin Park. Like he loves Linkin Park. He loves Tool. He loves Korn. Like those are his bands. And he plays them and loves it. So.
I want to come back to music on the golf course, but I also had a Mumford & Sons experience. It's not that great, but it might be a version, like a female version of Keegan. So
that's terrifying.
Scary.
but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt in that you weren't this person, but maybe. We'll see. So I'd seen them play like a radio show, which is not, it's never the best place to see like a band play. It's a good place to see like a ton of bands that would never play together. But the shows that they do are not, you know, you play a shorter set and you don't have your own production and it's the sound, they're going to take like a little bit of time to dial in your sound. And it's always just like kind of on the fly. So it's not the best place to see a band. Having said that, I saw them, I think we played a radio show together, maybe like a K-Rock show in LA. And I was like, these guys are awesome. I'm like, I want to go see them play their own like proper show. So we were like, they're going to be playing up in Santa Barbara at the Santa Barbara Bowl.
Great,
awesome
venue.
Awesome venue.
Really cool.
Right? It's big enough to have a ton of energy, small enough to still be like personable. It's outside. It's in Santa Barbara. It's in the summer. Like, perfect. Everything's lining up great. From the moment they dim the lights and they're coming out, there is a girl who's directly behind us who is just screaming Mumford at the top of her lungs.
Mumford!
I wouldn't enjoy that.
Oh, not screaming the songs, just screaming Mumford.
Mumford!
She's right? Woo girl.
She's woo girl, but it's Mumford.
Woo Mumford.
Screaming. And from you're just kind of like, that, oh, that's cool. Like you're really excited.
Yeah, you're gonna stop once they come out.
She
right?
didn't stop. She didn't stop for the entirety of like the hour and 20 minutes that they played. To the extent that we, like, she was overpowering the PA, and there's an entire little section of people that were around us that were, in my opinion, rightfully so, look, turning around as being like, hey, can you knock it off? Like, we're not here to hear you. Like, quit it. And she was just like, I'm here to have fun. Yeah. She couldn't even hear what was going on.
Right.
So when you're telling the story, I'm imagining Keegan dancing, just screaming in my sight. Ear, screaming yeah. Mumford into my ear.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the guys are like, wow, what an asshole. And they turn around and they go, it's Keegan Bradley. I got to get a picture with him.
Wait a minute. I know this guy.
That guy's a major champion. Hey, head's bigger than I thought.
Are you Keegan Bradley Mumford?
That's always the worst. Are you Keegan Bradley or are you Brendan Steele? I never know what to say. Like if they come up to you and they go, are you Keegan Bradley? Are you Brendan Steele? And I'm like, yeah. What do I say now? I don't know. Like it's always that's always the
and
worst.
Then it's always followed by they say something to you and you go, ha ha ha. Keegan has a fake laugh.
It hurts.
Your answer needs to be, I wish.
Yeah.
I
so
wish.
Sometimes he's I go, no, but I get that all the time.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, you really look like him.
I wish.
So
have you ever gotten? I think I've gotten this twice. Have you ever gotten the follow-up being, no, you're not?
Like, are you honestly, are you Phoenix? And then you say, yeah. And then you go, no, you're not.
And they're like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Okay. Now they're stuck in their own little, like, limbo of what's happening. And then you're immediately sucked into that, too, where you're just kind of like, I've just said yes. Now they are
saying
doing
no.
their own weird thing. Right. And then now... I guess I just leave? Like, what are we doing? Yeah, so where do we go from here?
Yeah. This is going back a few years. Greg and I went out in Laguna. We're in this, like, kind of clubby, loungy, I don't know, whatever. Greg and I just love to dance. We love to dance without our wives. We got a weird thing going on, but it's amazing. I go into the bathroom, and I take a leak, and I'm, like, washing my hands, and this guy goes, are you Brendan Steele? Like, no. And I'm so blacked out. Like, I don't even know what's happening. And he's like, wow, you really look like him. And I'm like, huh, that's weird. I'm like, who's that? And it's like, oh, he plays golf. Like, I went to high school with him. And I was like, oh.
Oh, God.
I'm like, okay. And he's like, what's your name? And I go,
Fred.
I said, Doug Green. And Doug Green's another buddy of ours, right? So I come back out and I tell Greg, and Greg's like, why did you say Doug Green? And I'm like, I don't know. It was the first name that popped into my head. So we had to call Doug and tell him, like, hey, you were out last night. And
even I wouldn't do that.
The worst part was, too, I ran into this same guy again a year later. But he didn't ask me about that. I'm sure he was like, oh,
he's like, this guy's
are
a weirdo.
Like, what a wacko.
He's like, are you Doug Green?
Are you Doug Green? I go, yeah.
Yes,
how'd you know that?
I am.
Yes, that's I funny. Am. Wild stuff.
He's a wacko, let me tell you.
You'd mentioned John Curran listening to music, Korn, Linkin Park, Tool.
Yeah.
The unholy trinity of new metal. But that made me think, for you guys, what do you think about like music on the golf course and like driving ranges that have music out and golf carts that have speaker systems and that whole thing?
I mean, I don't play around a casual golf without music going, like, ever in my life. Like, we have music going, or every cart's got music going. Now the carts have speakers in them. Like, this one place I play has like a screen up here that you can play music, different genres. It's like almost like Sirius XM. And we play, I mean, I don't know. I can't remember the last time I played around a golf, like casually with my buddies when we were playing music. And now I feel like, I remember there was talk at Zurich they were going to play music
the
like
whole time, and they
out
should.
On the course.
Yeah.
And that, because it was a team event, it's a little wacky anyways.
Yeah, because we've got the intro song already, yeah. Which is weird.
Weird.
It'd be better if they were just playing tunes the whole time and your team could like submit songs and they're just like in the playlist, right?
I think that would be so cool.
Yeah, I think that'd
like,
be cool too.
Just like create, because for us, when we're out there playing, it seems silly that stuff bothers us, but like if it was music going or if the crowd wasn't quiet, it wouldn't bother us.
Yeah.
It's when it's quiet and somebody does something, like if it was like a basketball game and there was music playing, we wouldn't be bothered by it. We'd love it.
It's kind of like that on 16 at Phoenix, right? It's so loud and there's so much noise that like, one guy can bug you, but it's harder for it to bug you than it will be any other time of the year.
Totally.
It's always like that, like constant noise, and that lot of noise is fine. And the music would be better
I agree.
Than anything else.
Totally.
So, I mean, I love it. I think all the ranges should have music going.
I hate it. So I'll throw that out there.
Nice. Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe it's only because I'm probably kind of a snob when it comes to music. And I feel like most people's playlists and that kind of thing kind of suck.
They're not going to cut it for you.
Right. And so like if I'm out at a driving range and they're just playing run of the mill like C minus country on the range, I can't handle it. I'm just like,
get me out of here.
So irritated and annoyed and like agitated.
I get that.
And then if you get into like a situation out on the course and it almost would need to be like all four people agree on what you're gonna listen to.
At least
in my crazy world. And then if there's like a song that I don't like or a part of a song or whatever, it can really mess me up. I'm not going to speak for musicians at all, because most of the other musicians that I play with enjoy having music out on the golf course. But for me, at least, I'm like, I am around music and noise and whatever so much. I really like it to be quiet.
Yeah,
like
right.
I like the separateness of that. So like when our course got speakers and stuff, thank God half of them don't work because the carts just suck. But when they got the speakers in the carts and that whole bit, I was just like,
I'm like, uh-oh, what am I going to be exposed to now? Well, then you have to start picking your group based on their musical taste too. Like, oh, I really like playing with Mark, but can't listen to another Fiona Apple song.
Fiona might be good on the golf course. Yeah. That might work.
Some Enya or some like Braveheart soundtrack. Just to
how about like
down.
The situation though when you've got like one dude in one golf cart and he's playing trance dance stuff, and then another dude in the same cart in the same group who's playing like Kenny Chesney, Pandora Station country, and you're on the tee box and you're like both of them are now like playing.
They're battling for your attention.
Yeah. And neither of them is like the right vibe at the moment.
Well, if they're both on a Pandora like station, then by the time you get to hole 17 or 18, they're both playing like Taylor Swift.
They're both playing the same song.
I think the last time you were on the podcast, we actually called you in, and it was right after you had won. Was that 2018?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was funny too, because we called him and we kind of just started. I thought you knew that we were like starting, and then you were just like, oh, are we like doing it right now? Like, yeah, we called you, you answered, and we were recording. That's how we do it here. Very efficient.
But what was it like for you to be back in the winner's circle, especially having your wife and your son there? And like, I'm sure for most of you golfers on tour, that's like a dream come true, right? To have your son there on the 18th hole when you finish.
Yeah, I mean, it'd been a long time in between wins for me. And really, for me, a real low point in my career professionally. You know, I went through a stretch where I was really not playing what I thought I should be doing. And then, but when I was talking to a lot of the, Steely could attest to this, when I was talking to a lot of the veteran guys, they would say, you got to enjoy this moment of the climb back. They're like, this is, you're going to, when you look back in your career, you're going to think about, you're not going to think about the win, you're not going to think about this, you're going to think about that climb back or the journey to where you want to go. And when you're in the middle of it, I mean, sucks. I feel like you're on the verge of doing this.
I've been at the bottom.
You've been at the bottom and you're doing the climb back. And that was the moment for me of like this was all worth it. Like all the hours, all the finishing your rounds, being pissed off, all the bogeys on 18 when like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then for us pros, the family running onto the 18th green is the jam. Like, that's what you see. Like, oh, I wonder if I'll ever get to do that. A, if you'll ever win.
Yeah.
Which is super hard. But B, like, if they're there.
Yeah.
Like, you could win. Like, if you wanted Sony, you're fit. So, it's like, it's such a rare combo to have that all come into place. And in, like, coming down the end, I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, sure, it made it harder. I was like, man, this is, and I'm coming down the end. It's a FedEx Cup event. It's a big tournament, and I needed to finish third or fourth to get in the.
It was like I think fifth or sixth, but you were in that position before the round started.
Yeah.
So this is actually a good story too, because we were headed to the course together so that the girls could have a car.
Yeah.
Right. And it had rained so much. We were finishing on Monday.
Yep.
And we didn't know if the course was even going to be in shape or how much rain they were going to get on Monday. And we're driving the course, and you were saying, like, I know this is bad to say this, but, like,
I wanted them to call the tournament.
If they cancel the tournament, I get to tour championship.
Which is, like, you're in all the majors. You're in my goal is starting the year to make tour championship. And I had, like, a 10-footer for par on, it was Saturday night. It was after the third round. And everyone was like, it's going to rain so hard. This is the last round.
Yeah, it's going to be 54 holes for sure.
Like, this is the last round. And I needed to come. I thought it was third or fourth, whatever it was. I needed to make this putt to finish on the spot to get into the tour championship.
To be 30th.
I had to 10-footer, and I knew it. I could see it on the board. I knew. I go, this is, I have to make this putt, and I made it. And I was so happy. I was, because everyone's saying, it's going to rain, need to get out of here.
Right.
One of those moves. So we get up Sunday. The whole Saturday night, I didn't sleep at all. I think I've told you this. Like, because I was so paranoid about what's going to happen. I wasn't worried about winning the tournament.
You wanted the rain.
I was three or four shots back. Justin Rose was leading. I was so, would have been so happy with just making the tour championship. We get out there Sunday. They call the day. It's rained so hard. So then we're going to come back Monday. But
nobody's
like,
even sure.
Everyone
knows
like,
what
no
the deal
way
is.
We're playing. We're not, and so I'm a nervous wreck the whole time, because making the tour championship is a big deal for us.
Yeah.
And so I come in and have lunch breakfast with Steely on Sunday morning or Monday morning, and I'm like, we're going out. We're playing. So then, like, all of a sudden I had to like really refocus here, because I was like really hoping that we're going
to
cancel.
It would have been easy to play a bad round after that.
And I went out there and played so well. Like, it's one of those, just one of those days where never was nervous. Like, we talk about this all the time. I am my least nervous around the lead. Hmm. I'm my most nervous around the cut, or like around coming in top 10 versus 15th. Like, when we're there, I feel more comfortable. Like, that's why with when I talk to my coaches and stuff, I don't talk about winning. I want to just put myself in the position. Because I feel like if I put myself in the position, I'm going to convert some of those times. Not every time. Mm-hmm. But I don't put as my goals, like, I want to win this. I say I want to be within this many of the lead six times. You know, because I feel like if I am there, I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was, that was just one of those days. I went out there. I played so great. And I birdied 16, 17, and then I made the worst bogey of my life on 18. Like, I thought I'd lost the tournament. Steely waited. He was there. And I was so... Remember how pissed I was?
Yeah.
I was just like...
Well, and... Because you wanted to take credit for me going to Sony and whatever. Yeah. I'm going to take credit now. Because I said, get your putter. Let's go to the putting green. Because he's not just going to come up and make par on this last hole. You're going to have a playoff. So let's refocus.
And
I yelled at
him. And I think you even said...
I did.
I think you even said, like... And you made the tour championship.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking... Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, that's good.
And I, of course, you're thinking, no way Justin Rose is going to bogey 18. Like, when you're on that side of it,
yeah,
they're never
no
going to
make... that they can ever make a mistake.
Meanwhile, the hole is 480 yards straight into the wind. It's raining.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, I hit a wood in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and then there's this moment, which Steely's been a part of, he just was a part of it. But when you're not in the last group and the guy's got a putt to win the tournament, you're just standing there. It's dead quiet. And you're just waiting for the reaction. You're waiting for the big cheer or the
oh.
And so you're like, we were on the putting green and you could just tell it's there's a murmur and then it just gets dead quiet. And so you're just waiting.
Yep. There it goes.
There's no like TV camera or something. And then you hear the and then you're like, all right, let's go. Like, it's now I'm in a playoff. Now I can friggin' win this tournament, which didn't seem possible a couple of years ago. And I went out there and made par on tough hole. Justin missed a shortish 5-footer. That short, but. And I've been in this situation one other time where I had like this far. And I'm like, can he just miss this one time? Just. And it doesn't ever seem to miss it. And it's like you watch it and it doesn't go in and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Yeah. Well, because I literally just had the same thing with a longer putt. Right? I mean, Cameron Smith had 10 feet, and I'm a foot.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, he has to make it. If he misses it, I win. And of course, he makes it. And you're just like, of course he makes it.
Yeah.
Right? Of course.
Yeah. It's tough. But then my family was there. They ran out on the green.
Were you scanning for them at any point, like on the green, or are you trying not to look at them?
I had a putt when to win the tournament. Or not to win the tournament, to... Maybe it was my chip. It was either in the regulation or the playoff where I was getting up to read my putt and I could see them like through the little walkway. I could see this wacko too. And I could see them and I felt myself like getting like emotional, like, wow. Like, whether I win it or not, this has been really an incredible day. And then you got to be like, hold on a second. Like, let's get this together. And then I made the putt and they weren't running out. Like, they don't know what to do either. And so if you watch, I wave to them to come out, and they come running out. Yeah. And I'll never forget Logan, my son's face. Like, as soon as he saw me, he started smiling. He doesn't have a clue what's going on. But so I'm lucky. Who knows if I'll ever get that chance again. You know, even if you win 10 more times,
yeah,
you don't know if it's going to, you know.
So. You've had the chance of having your daughters come on stage and watch you perform and stuff, and –
Yeah, it's different, obviously, playing a show versus winning a golf tournament. Because when you win the tournament, the kids come out and they show up on the 18th green, and then there's like, yay!
Yeah.
If you play a show, you know, if we're doing like an hour and a half or a two-hour set, I think, like, depending on the age of the kids, they'll come out and they'll watch a couple songs, and then it's just like, dude, we've got somebody backstage who'll make grilled cheeses for us.
Yeah,
and there's,
right.
Like, crayons and like, coloring books and iPads and like.
Yeah, I saw an Xbox back there. Yeah.
There's been a handful of like a ton of shows where I'm excited because the kids are like out and they came to the show that night because usually it's late and we're not bringing them out to the shows, but they came out to the show. Like, this is going to be their one show that they come to watch of the tour. Three songs in, I'm like, kids are gone, they're done.
They're like, that's it.
Yep, they're out. They have tapped out.
The funny story about the night before I had won was, whenever Steely and I are at a tournament together with the kids and the family, we try to carpool so they have a car. So that night, Steely and I go to bed, and obviously we're in a hotel room and we have the kids. So they're sleeping. But Anastasia, Steely's wife, and my wife, Jillian, they went out and like had a billion drinks.
Sent it.
So she was lying in the hotel room, and I made a putt on like one of the holes, like 12, and she goes, oh shit, I gotta get to the course. It's just funny.
Well, and she gets to the course, and you're like coming up because I was done. Mm-hmm. I finished last, I think. I had Jason Sobel caddying for me the last round in a group with Phil. Yeah. But she gets there, and then I'm like, come in here, like, let's get some food. And there's like kind of not any food left. We're like getting some snacks, and I'm like, do we need to get cocktails? And she's like, yes. So yeah, we're like getting cocktails. Then at one point, like, I'm carrying Logan around, and people are like telling me how cute my kid is. Yeah. You know, it's like one of those moves.
It's the tour is like one, like, you, your group of friends is like, you're just like a big family. You know, you go through this with your,
yeah.
So like, it's just like you remember, like, it's weird the stuff you remember. Like that day, I don't remember. I remember some of the shots, but I mostly remember hanging out. Like, we went, there's a moment after you win where you've gone and done this incredible thing. And it's like you've come to the pinnacle of your life, of your career, and then all of a sudden you're like sitting in your hotel room and everything's normal.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but it's like a very surreal moment where you drive out of the course and you're just doing your life.
Yeah, it's back to normal. It's back to normal.
It's so fast back to normal where
we went and got pizzas at a place that was like, you just like, you go up and you just order it, they just make it, you know, like the quick, like, make, build your own pizza type place. And we were just sitting there like eating pizza and a Coke.
I had just beat Justin Rose to win a playoff event.
Yeah. Like, and you're like going to the tour championship with a chance to win the FedEx Cup and win $10 million.
And like, we were
an $8 pizza. Yeah. And going, oh, okay.
And then
that
we
was
went
good.
Back to the bar and like
had some drinks.
We had drinks, but it was just like, it could have been
the funny thing is, if you had shot 78 and you were devastated, the night would have been almost the same.
Exact same. Yeah.
Like, other than the mood, like, then we would have gotten pizza and had a few drinks and then moved
and
on.
We
to
would have
next
bitched
stop.
And moaned for a little bit.
Yeah.
And
then. Exactly.
That's so relatable for me in a weird way. Like, we have had so many triumphant moments that it's like, start the timer, because in half an hour I'm going to be just sitting in a hotel room by myself, like, with all the lights on, so it doesn't feel kind of like dark and sad. Probably eating like some kind of cold meal that I either brought back with me.
Or raiding the minibar.
Yeah. Or like ordering some, like, a club sandwich off room service.
Yeah.
You're just like, we just played for like 100,000 people at Headlines Festival.
And we nailed it.
And now I'm like sitting by myself in this hotel room, and I'm like, drinking a bubble
surreal.
Water with like a club sandwich.
It's very surreal. It's one of my favorite parts about doing that, because like, I remember coming home after I won the PGA, and I got the Wanamaker trophy sitting on the table. I'm looking at it, and like, I remember seeing Ben Hogan's name, and it's like, it's so surreal. And I'm sitting around having cereal and drinking Bud Light. My life is totally back to normal. And like, I'm like...
And your buddies are coming over and they're still making fun of you and doing good plan, I guess, whatever. You're still an idiot.
Yeah, you're an idiot. Like, order the pizza.
Get enough this time. You didn't get enough last time.
Yeah, totally.
Does the cereal have the Bud Light in it?
No, so after I won, that we were in Atlanta and no store... It's like Sunday, they don't sell booze. So that's all we had. Like, I just, we can only get cereal and, but I don't know, I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but there's a moment that I love after doing something like that, and it's that moment where you've done what you've lived your whole life to do, but it's just normal again. I don't know. I just love that moment of the whole experience.
Awesome. Well, we usually at this point we congratulate you for becoming a member, but
I'm already a member.
Yeah,
I have a hat. I have a ball marker.
You're one of the few two-timers.
Am I?
Yeah. There's only three, right? Kelvin and Steven, Mike, Keegan.
And Trey Cool.
Oh, and Trey. Four. Okay, yeah. So you're the fourth.
Okay.
It sounded better when you were the third.
Yeah.
Now you're the fourth.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no medal after a bronze, right? No.
Yeah, exactly.
Fourth place.
Yeah.
Fourth position to finish.
You are, though, the most current two-timer.
That's true.
Yeah,
member.
I'll take
that.
For sure.
Member that we have.
Well, we'll have to have you back. Maybe you can be like the third timer or something.
I'll take that.
Know?
Yeah.
Move you up a slot.
and usually at this point too, we say, you know, where can people find you? But you're very similar to me these days that we're not that active on social media.
I'm not at all.
So it's almost like you could say where people could not find you.
Wave from me from really far away. That's like my favorite time.
Yeah. Hey, Keegan.
And that's
yep.
Thumbs
up for me.
Yeah. Or give me a fist pound.
Yeah. That's maybe good. Not too close to my personal space.
Exactly. Now you're getting it.
Now you're getting it. I think this is why Keegan and I became friends in the first place. I understand all of your little things.
Yeah.
And I try to like kind of insulate you from that as much as I can. Sometimes I just
it's impossible.
I have to let it fly and then it's just all hell breaks. But
sometimes you got to get him dancing.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to get him dancing.
Steely's one of the few people to ever get me dancing, and he's one of the few people to ever pick up a check at dinner with me. It's a very small list that he's on it. I always say that to him.
I'll take those two things. I think those two are
pretty
good.
List.
So, I mean, I already know this, but tell us what's coming up for you next. Few months or whatever, like where are you playing, what are you doing, give us a rundown and then
I'm playing Phoenix next week, Riviera, and then I'm on the edge of the WGCs, and you know, there's always something in golf.
There's always
like,
something,
whether you're top 50 or you're top 10 or you're trying to make a Ryder Cup, a President's Cup. For me right now it's getting into the WGCs and then the Florida Swing, which is my home swing. I almost play in all of them. So, but my schedule is up in the air because of the world ranking, but play well enough, you don't have to worry about it.
So if you want to see Keegan, don't look for him on social media.
Yeah.
Come out to a tournament and yell at him from a long way away.
That's perfect.
And he'll give you a thumbs up and he'll really appreciate it.
I'll probably do that at Riv in a couple weeks.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
So it'll give you a chance to do the, you know, are you Keegan Bradley?
Not today.
No.
I kind of wanted to scream that at Keegan next chance I get.
I'll just yell, Mumford!
Mumford!
Or, are you Keegan Bradley? And then, do you remember me? That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's always really good.
Yeah.
I like it when people just come up and act like you should know exactly who they are. I haven't seen you in 20 years.
Yeah.
I had that happen the other day. I'm like, I can tell the guy's looking at me, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And he's like, yeah, it's great to see you. I haven't seen you in what? Yeah, okay.
Bye.
No idea. Sorry.
Or people just come up to you with like a golf hat on and they like point to the hat and they're like,
yeah, or like
see
a
that?
Golf
Callaway.
Course. They
see?
Will do it where the golf course. They'll be like,
see?
Look. And I'm like, Torrey Pines. Nice. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, I like
that
Torrey
place. Pines. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there. Okay.
No, I own Torrey Pines.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Keegan, for being on.
Thanks, boys.
For us, you can find our socials. I'm not even gonna do you the disservice of mentioning them. Mark will mention them, maybe. No,
not today.
Not today.
Not today. He's not Keegan Bradley today.
No, it's not today. As always,
may your drives fly straight. Guitars stay tuned now and forever. Adios.
I think I'm over caffeinated.
You're over-caffeinated?
I think
you're undernourished.
I'm like freaking out.
You haven't eaten in like 6 days, maybe, but you don't get hungry.
He's never hungry.
Maybe I'm hungry.
Do you want to have dinner tonight, or should we just skip that?
I'm excited for dinner.
Okay, good.
I'm gonna convince Keegan to come.
That's gonna be tough. I'm gonna be tucked in bed by 7:45.
We're gonna pick up a check, Keegan.
In 2 hours from
now,
you're gonna be dancing.
Oh, that is not gonna happen.
All right.
All right, boys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.